Chapter 23. For the duel, said Lute. Dubert, curtly. He was annoyed greatly by this sort of perverse fooling. The duel. Lute. Ferrod passed from one paroxysm of astonishment into another. He dropped his hands and walked on slowly, trying to reconcile this information with the state of his own feelings. It was impossible. He burst out indignantly, was I to let that sauerkraut-eating civilian wipe his boots on the uniform of the 7th Hussars? Lute. Dubert could not remain altogether unmoved by that simple sentiment. This little fellow was a lunatic, he thought to himself, but there was something in what he said. Of course, I don't know how far you were justified, he began, soothingly. And the general himself may not be exactly informed. Those people have been deafening him with their lamentations. Ah, the general is not exactly informed, mumbled Lute. Ferrod, walking faster and faster as his choler at the injustice of his fate began to rise. He is not exactly. And he orders me under close arrest, with God knows what afterwards. Don't excite yourself like this, remonstrated the other. Why, your adversary's people are very influential, you know, and it looks bad enough on the face of it. The general had to take notice of their complaint at once. I don't think he means to be over severe with you. It's the best thing for you to be kept out of sight for a while. I am very much obliged to the general, muttered Lute. Ferrod threw his teeth. And perhaps you would say I ought to be grateful to you too, for the trouble you have taken to hunt me up in the drawing room of a lady who, frankly, interrupted Lute. Dubert, with an innocent laugh, I think you ought to be. I had no end of trouble to find out where you were. It wasn't exactly the place for you to disport yourself in under the circumstances. If the general had caught you there making eyes at the goddess of the temple. Oh, my word. He hates to be bothered with complaints against his officers, you know. And it looked uncommonly like sheer bravado. The two officers had arrived now at the street door of Lute. Ferrod's lodgings. The latter turned towards his companion. Lute. Dubert, he said, I have something to say to you, which can't be said very well in the street. You can't refuse to come up. The pretty maid had opened the door. Lute. Ferrod brushed past her brusquely, and she raised her scared and questioning eyes to Lute. Dubert, who could do nothing but shrug his shoulders slightly as he followed with marked reluctance. In his room, Lute. Ferrod unhooked the clasp, flung his new dolman on the bed, and, folding his arms across his chest, turned to the other hussar. Do you imagine I am a man to submit tamely to injustice? He inquired, in a boisterous voice. Oh, do be reasonable, remonstrated Lute. Dubert. I am reasonable. I am perfectly reasonable, retorted the other with ominous restraint. I can't call the general to account for his behavior, but you are going to answer me for yours. I can't listen to this nonsense, murmured Lute. Dubert, making a slightly contemptuous grimace. You call this nonsense? It seems to me a perfectly plain statement. Unless you don't understand French. What on earth do you mean? I mean, screamed suddenly Lute. Ferrod, to cut off your ears, to teach you to disturb me with the general's orders when I am talking to a lady. A profound silence followed this mad declaration, and through the open window Lute. Dubert heard the little bird singing sanely in the garden. He said, preserving his calm, why? If you take that tone, of course I shall hold myself at your disposition, whenever you are at liberty, to attend to this affair, but I don't think you will cut my ears off. I am going to attend to it at once, declared Lute. Ferrod, with extreme truculence. If you are thinking of displaying your airs and graces tonight in Madame de Lion's salon, you are very much mistaken. Really? Said Lute. Dubert, who was beginning to feel irritated, you are an impracticable sort of fellow. The general's orders to me were to put you under arrest, not to carve you into small pieces. Good morning. And turning his back on the little Gascon, who, always sober in his potations, was as though born intoxicated with the sunshine of his vine-ripening country, the Northman, who could drink hard on occasion, but was born sober under the watery skies of Picardy, made for the door. Hearing, however, the unmistakable sound behind his back of a sword drawn from the scabbard, he had no option but to stop. Devil take this mad southerner, he thought, spinning round and surveying with composure the warlike posture of Lute. Ferrod, with a bare sword in his hand. At once, stuttered Ferrod, beside himself. You had my answer, said the other, keeping his temper very well. At first he had been only vexed, and somewhat amused, but now his face got clouded. He was asking himself seriously how he could manage to get away. It was impossible to run from a man with a sword, and as to fighting him, it seemed completely out of the question. He waited a while, then said exactly what was in his heart. Drop this. I won't fight with you. I won't be made ridiculous. Ah, you won't? Hissed the Gascon. I suppose you prefer to be made infamous. Do you hear what I say? Infamous. 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 He shrieked, rising and falling on his toes, and getting very red in the face. Lute. Dubert, on the contrary, became very pale at the sound of the unsavory word for a moment, then flushed pink to the roots of his fair hair. But you can't go out to fight. You are under arrest, you lunatic, he objected, with angry scorn. There's the garden. It's big enough to lay out your long carcass in, spluttered the other with such ardor that somehow the anger of the cooler man subsided. This is perfectly absurd, he said, glad enough to think he had found a way out of it for the moment. We shall never get any of our comrades to serve as seconds. It's preposterous. Seconds. Damn the seconds. We don't want any seconds. Don't you worry about any seconds. I shall send word to your friends to come and bury you when I am done. And if you want any witnesses, I'll send word to the old girl to put her head out of a window at the back. Stay. There's the gardener. He'll do. He's as deaf as a post, but he has two eyes in his head. Come along. I will teach you, my staff officer, that the carrying about of a general's orders is not always child's play. While thus discoursing, he had unbuckled his empty scabbard. He sent it flying under the bed, and, lowering the point of the sword, brushed past the perplexed Lute. Dubert, exclaiming, follow me. Directly he had flung open the door, a faint shriek was heard, and the pretty maid, who had been listening at the keyhole, staggered away, putting the backs of her hands over her eyes. Ferrod did not seem to see her, but she ran after him, and seized his left arm. He shook her off, and then she rushed towards Lute. Dubert and clawed at the sleeve of his uniform. Wretched man, she sobbed. Is this what you wanted to find him for? Let me go, entreated Lute. Dubert, trying to disengage himself gently. It's like being in a madhouse, he protested, with exasperation. Do let me go. I won't do him any harm. A fiendish laugh from Lute. Ferrod commented that assurance. See, come along, he shouted, with a stamp of his foot. And Lute. Dubert did follow. He could do nothing else. Yet in vindication of his sanity it must be recorded that as he passed through the anteroom the notion of opening the street door and bolting out presented itself to this brave youth. Only, of course, to be instantly dismissed, for he felt sure that the other would pursue him without shame or compunction. And the prospect of an officer of hussars being chased along the street by another officer of hussars with a naked sword could not be for a moment entertained. Therefore he followed into the garden. Behind them the girl tottered out to. With ashy lips and wild, scared eyes, she surrendered herself to a dreadful curiosity. He had also the notion of rushing, if need be, between Lute. Pharaoh and death. The deaf gardener, utterly unconscious of approaching footsteps, went on watering his flowers till mute. Pharaoh thumped him on the back. Beholding suddenly an enraged man flourishing a big saber, the old chap trembling in all his limbs dropped the watering pot. At once lewd. Pharaoh kicked it away with great animosity, and, seizing the gardener by the throat, backed him against a tree. He held him there, shouting in his ear, "Stay here, and look on. You understand? You've got to look on. Don't dare budge from the spot." Lewd. Dubert came slowly down the walk, unclasping his dolman with unconcealed disgust. Even then, with his hand already on the hilt of his sword, he hesitated to draw till a roar, "On guard, Fichter! What do you think you came here for?" And the rush of his adversary forced him to put himself as quickly as possible in a posture of defense. The clash of arms filled that grim garden, which hitherto had known no more warlike sound than the click of clipping shears, and presently the upper part of an old lady's body was projected out of a window upstairs. She tossed her arms above her white cap, scolding in a cracked voice. The gardener remained glued to the tree, his toothless mouth open in idiotic astonishment, and a little farther up the path the pretty girl, as if spellbound to a small grass plot, ran a few steps this way and that, wringing her hands, and muttering crazily. She did not rush between the combatants. The onslaughts of Lute Pharaoh were so fierce that her heart failed her. Lute Dubert, his faculties concentrated upon defense, needed all his skill and science of the sword to stop the rushes of his adversary. Twice already he had to break ground. It bothered him to feel his foothold made insecure by the round, dry gravel of the path rolling under the hard soles of his boots. This was most unsuitable ground, he thought, keeping a watchful, narrow gaze, shaded by long eyelashes, upon the fiery stare of his thick-set adversary. This absurd affair would ruin his reputation of a sensible, well-behaved, promising young officer. It would damage, at any rate, his immediate prospects, and lose him the goodwill of his general. These worldly preoccupations were no doubt misplaced in view of the solemnity of the moment. A duel, whether regarded as a ceremony in the cult of honor, or even when reduced in its moral essence to a form of manly sport, demands a perfect singleness of intention, a homicidal austerity of mood. On the other hand, this vivid concern for his future had not a bad effect inasmuch as it began to rouse the anger of Lute Dubert. Some 70 seconds had elapsed since they had crossed blades, and Lute Dubert had to break ground again in order to avoid impaling his reckless adversary like a beetle for a cabinet of specimens. The result was that, misapprehending the motive, Lute Pharaoh with a triumphant sort of snarl pressed his attack. "This enraged animal will have me against the wall directly," thought Lute Dubert. He imagined himself much closer to the house than he was, and he dared not turn his head. It seemed to him that he was keeping his adversary off with his eyes rather more than with his point. Lute Pharaoh crouched and bounded with a fierce tigerish agility fit to trouble the stoutest heart. But what was more appalling than the fury of a wild beast, accomplishing in all innocence of heart a natural function, was the fixity of savage purpose man alone is capable of displaying. Lute D. Hubert, in the midst of his worldly preoccupations, perceived it at last. It was an absurd and damaging affair to be drawn into, but whatever silly intention the fellow had started with, it was clear enough that by this time he meant to kill nothing less. He meant it with an intensity of will utterly beyond the inferior faculties of a tiger. As is the case with constitutionally brave men, the full view of the danger interested Lute Dubert. And directly he got properly interested, the length of his arm and the coolness of his head told in his favor. It was the turn of Lute Pharaoh to recoil, with a blood-curdling grunt of baffled rage. He made a swift feint, and then rushed straight forward. "Ah, you would you?" Lute Dubert exclaimed, mentally. The combat had lasted nearly 2 minutes, time enough for any man to get em. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.